in Indonesia and why this, you know, why he had taken this approach and why many people in America didn't feel that way. And it was just felt so good to have that mutual understanding, like through the language, about two completely different subjects, but things that we could really see across lines on. So yeah, a moment will always stay with me, I think.
And if there are any other questions?
I want to say thank you all for sharing. I really enjoyed listening to all of you. I have a quick question, and it kind of relates. I think all of you indirectly and somewhat directly touched on this, and I won't disguise it. It is a leading question, but I would love to hear more about why you think it's important to learn the language that I know many of you talked about going on and wanting to work in that area or do research, but why do you think it's so important to learn the language?
Well, I think for me, it's just, it really does break down, like, the cultural barrier, being able to speak to someone in their language instead of making them speak to you in English or whatever language you speak in. You know, it just establishes, I think, a sense of trust between you and that person. And who knows where you can go on from there. And, you know, maybe it'll make greater connections across the world if everyone learns another language, is basically how I saw it, aside from my own professional ambitions.
And I think continuing a language past the kind of like first year of, like, especially in Chinese culture, you know, they're very nice to foreigners where they'll say, oh, wow, your Chinese is so good. And it's like, I really just said hello. they're like, no, you're so smart. You're so great. But if you can actually engage them in a conversation of substance beyond the formalities and the niceties, then you can actually kind of get at what Lexi was saying, that deeper relationship where, you know, just that... at Taiwanese bars, I'd just ask about, like, local Taiwanese politics, you know, the election's coming up, and, and I was like, what do you think? You think Tsai Ing-wen's gonna keep, DPP's gonna keep the legislative UN? They'd be like, ah, no, like, she's ruining the economy or something like that. It'd always be over a beer, because it loosens everyone up. But being able to engage in conversations of substance, I think, beyond, you know, professional development, just kind of cultural learning and getting outside of the very U.S.-centric mindset that I've had and I think most Americans do have.
Yeah. And on that note, his first anecdote, I remember when I was first learning Chinese, one of the first things I could say was, I don't understand Chinese, and they took that as, oh my God, she can understand Chinese. No, please don't speak to me.
I would say also, I mean, just going like broader lens, the reason why I also said like I got really lucky in choosing this language is because, as I'm sure you guys know, in working, you know, with various government agencies as well and promoting language learning, like Indonesian is becoming such a critical language for the US government. And I say this specifically for like the Indonesian language learners in the room or interested in that region. Like I just learned this summer that the Department of Defense, I believe it is, like, took it up as a critical language. So they are, like, first it was state and now it's defense, and so now there's all of this extra money kind of flowing into this language, and it's fantastic, I think, that the U.S. government is recognizing how critical this region is for national security, for, you know, the future of climate change, for the future of you know, environmental change overall in this world. And so, yeah, I think it's really important that, like, people like us are learning the language and continuing to promote that, like, cultural awareness of that Indonesia is not just Bali. it's very important as well. And just for any country like that, that, you know, a lot of people speak Spanish and a lot of people, you know, like to study Arabic here at UW or French or whatever, and those languages are fantastic, but I think it's wonderful as well to promote languages that are not quite as recognized as these, you know, really global languages, so.
I think in my area, I can only speak for Iwakas. It's really important to understand the people you're trying to help. And if you don't even speak the same language, I mean, in my case, like, I don't speak Chinese, but at least Indonesian is a language like you're saying. Like, there's a funny story behind that as well. And I think if you can't talk to the very people that you're trying to help or the people that they're interested in, there's a tendency to be sort of misled by these narratives. And today, the narratives can be very securitized. Sharia Muslims means violent. And of course, if you talk to them, it's like, why would you ever think that? And you can't do that if you don't have the language.
think that's very interesting because somebody said that if you speak to somebody in your language, you're speaking to his head. But if you speak to somebody in his language, you're speaking to his heart. So I think language can open opportunities that it's hard to imagine.
And any other questions, please?
Some of you mentioned that your language level was improved after you attend this program. And then my question is, did you or the program set a special requirement, or what is your expectation? And did you reach that expectation?
I think I met my expectation. For one thing, you know, reading an article in like a news article in Chinese as opposed to reading a story in Chinese, there's definitely a difference in the level, and I think I've become much more accomplished in reading an news article in Chinese, and that was a lot of my expectation. Was I didn't want to become fluent because that's really difficult in only 2 months, but I did want to get better at being able to use like business Chinese or, you know, Chinese I would use in my professional life. So I think I'm definitely got there to where I wanted. I mean, I'm still gonna keep on improving and continue to want to improve.
So my program didn't have any requirements. It used to be that you had to be like a third year or above, but I think they wanted more people, so they accepted first and second years, and they had the whole language pledge thing, which was tough for people who didn't know any Chinese. But so the way ours worked is you took a placement test at the beginning of the semester. That was the placement test the first day you're there, and you take it again on your last day, same exact test. And that'll be kind of your metric of how much you've improved. And I improved quite a bit. I mean, as I said, you know, maybe my expectations are too high. But, learning language is always a humbling experience. Looking back, I mean, just... My program also has a very strong focus on speaking. So we had to give a speech every week in each of the classes. And our professors would sit there right next to you and interrupt every time you had a wrong tone.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh my God. But like, because their whole thing is like, you don't speak Chinese if you don't know tones. If your tones are all over the place, you know, you're making it more difficult for the person sitting across you who probably has better English than you do Chinese. But, you know, forcing them to listen to your, you know, atrocious Chinese is just, you know, don't even bother. So they really hammer that in. And I think that was one of the biggest, you know, highlights of that program. Not at the time, but looking back.
Yeah.
It's definitely a lot better.
Very humiliating.
I remember,
like, maybe my second day, and I was getting mad because she kept on jumping in, like, every other word. She was like, that's wrong, that's wrong, that's wrong. And I was like, just, like, sitting there, like, stewing. But then I, like, snapped out of it later. I was like, God, you don't know. You don't speak Chinese fluently. She knows. Oh, and also, there is no requirement for to enter NTNU. Absolutely none.
Yeah, most languages or most programs don't have I should say that a lot of language programs over the summer don't have requirements to, like for the Seeger Center grant, like there's not a requirement that you have to have already been a certain proficiency rate. So that's a useful thing to know. I just use this as a way to pass my Elliott School language requirement, which I did. Woohoo! So I was like, thank God. Because I was so nervous getting into my senior year and having nothing done. So.
Any other questions?
What do you think was your most daunting challenge in terms of adjusting culturally?
I would say, specifically as a woman, I find it very difficult to be in certain areas of the country where there's no previous exposure to tourism. like a lot of times that, like, even with men as well, like any foreigner, it's kind of this like, it's like the foreigner effect, like you kind of get there and people are very shocked that you're there. Like the island that I was on for 3 months, eventually they got used to me. There was like, oh, there's the boule over there, like the one white woman that is wandering around the island. But that to me was like probably the hardest adjustment period, was being in an area where I couldn't walk outside without having like the entire, like 100 school children swarm me and follow me down the street. Which it, you know, at the same time can be a learning opportunity for you and them in terms of interacting with them and being almost like the good tourist, because I was trying to introduce tourism as an alternative livelihood, or the NGO I was working for was trying to introduce tourism as an alternative livelihood for these people. So coming there and saying like, I am respectful of your culture, like I am, you know, I'm not walking around in a bikini and you know, playing loud music and drinking beer, as they believe most tourists do. So being able to go there and be respectful and interact and talk to them, I think was really useful in like opening other people's eyes to what tourism can be. So that was like a really interesting learning experience for me, like seeing how I was perceived in some of these areas, and also how a lot of foreigners are perceived. Because like you go to Bali nowadays and it's actually really, really heartbreaking how horrible tourism has turned that area, you know, just people are so disrespectful when they go there, and it's just makes me really, really upset, because you don't want other places to turn into that. So yeah,
it kind of turned me off Bali.
Bali's amazing, don't definitely go there, but yeah.
I don't know,
be respectful when you do, I guess.
I will, with your guidance. For me, I mean, I had been living in Hong Kong like prior to that for like 5 years, and I'd also been to Taiwan a couple of times, so that was all right. But this is gonna sound pretty, I don't know, I guess Western, but when I saw where I was living, then I had to find my own place. Like, I think I found it on like a Facebook group for like people who moved to Taiwan or something. It was like, oh man, why did I sign up for this? So that was a huge, but I needed a lot of adjustment for that one. It was a very unique housing situation. So, but other than that, it was all good in terms of adapting to culture.
Yeah, I actually had a great time adapting to the culture, especially compared to my time in Shanghai a few years ago. That was a big culture shock. That was my first time, extended time in Asia. And after that kind of honeymoon period of, wow, everything is so cool, it's like, actually walking on the sidewalk and getting run over by a moped is not that cool. Yeah. Or people just like not following basic, you know, social
norms.
Yeah. So going to Taiwan, where they do follow traffic laws and they queue up properly and, you know, everyone's very polite. It's a metropolitan city, so that's also different. But even going down south of Taiwan, I think maybe part of it is they have the same kind of ideals and democracy as we do in the States, and most Taiwanese really love Americans. So I had a great time there. Everyone was very, very kind. They're all, for the most part, very polite people as well. There's like no culture shock. I fit in right away. And they're all like, "Whoa, you're so big and you're Asian. What are you though?" I'm like, "Oh, like, what is it?" They're like, "Oh, okay, mixed blood." I'm like, "Yeah." Then I told them, "Okay, but my mom was born in Taiwan." Like, "Oh, that's so great." But she moved when she was really young. Oh, okay.
almost there.
But they were always really curious, and it was honestly, they were more polite asking where I'm from than most Americans are. So, I think it was I had a great time in Taiwan. Highly recommend it to anyone and everyone.
I must say, nobody ever asked me where I'm from.
Oh.
Either here or in Indonesia.
Really?
Yeah, in Indonesia, they assume I'm local. And I think here, there's a bit of a taboo. So people just don't ask. That's my guess.
Like DC itself. Yeah, it's the taboo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's true. No one
wants to be that guy.
Yeah, they don't.
Something that I got that took me a while to adjust to was the sense of time. I think Singapore and here is kind of the same. Like, we structure our time really precisely. And there, that's just not how it works. Like, we'll meet you in the evening, which means 9 p.m., drinking coffee until like 2 a.m. And when I was trying to like organize my interviews, because I wanted to make sure I got my interviews, I was trying to like sort them out by like times of the day. And yeah, I would drink 7 coffees at night with 7 different people, because that's how these swing. Which was actually, once I got used to it, was incredibly liberating. Like, and then coming back to Singapore, coming back to here, it's like, oh yeah, good. I don't know. I think I learned a bit about myself from that as well. And why we do these things to ourselves.
That's a good point to make. I forgot about that. I would be sitting there, like, right on the dot, ready for class, and, like, everyone would come in 10 minutes later, and I was like, I've been sitting here for 10 minutes. And they're like, hey, guys.
Probably fit in there.
I have a question, actually. Thank you all very much for coming. I think it's wonderful for you guys to come to presentations like this, for us to hear these opportunities too, because I mean, your organizations are literally how I have achieved this language so far. So I'm curious, after you guys hearing all of our presentations and where we're at sort of in our careers, if you think of any, can think of any like particular programs that might interest us, or maybe anything you could plug after knowing what we're doing.
Question.
Yeah, apply to CLS again.
I don't want to get the third time's a charm, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think there are a lot of opportunities out there, and as long as you have that eligibility as it being enrolled in a university, then it's definitely worth taking advantage of. Mm-hmm. But then you'll always get something new out of it. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I mean, most of our programs, we do have different levels of classes and whatnot, so even if you do get to be more advanced, then you can still have a class that's going to benefit you. And we've had some super advanced students, so we've been able to make some accommodation and be able to provide some special one-on-one instruction, not like a daily thing, but or to give them special projects and whatnot. So, and I've done Warren as well, and I definitely highly recommend that program. And that's a little bit less structured, so you basically choose your own program, and then you get the funding to do that program. So it depends on which way you want to go. Our programs tend to be more structured programs as opposed to you going and figuring everything out for yourself. So if you like a really structured program and you gravitate towards that, then these programs are really, really good for that, especially if you don't have a whole lot of experience abroad and you'd like to kind of get into it. I mean, you guys already have quite a bit of an experience, so you might prefer a program where you have a lot more flexibility to kind of do your own thing. And you can do your own research with Warren as well. So, and research is kind of discouraged with these programs just because they're so intensive that there's not much time to do research. So if that's something that interests you, you might want to look at a program that specifically gives you the time to spend some time on your research.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think because we're focused more on language gains, we don't necessarily have specific expectations out there that we expect you to meet. You're not penalized or asked to pay back the scholarship or anything if you don't meet it. But we do, especially for short-term programs, focus on your oral proficiency. Mm. So students usually take an oral proficiency interview at the beginning and then at the end, and of course other assessments throughout, but we're really looking at the OPI scores. And at the end, you'll be able to see how much you grew over that short period of time, which is always really rewarding. There are a number of opportunities, and I would say for undergrads and graduate students, CLS is great. I'm going to leave some materials here from our outbound programs. Again, these offer some partial scholarships, which are great in combination with the funding from here, which is awesome. Again, for undergrad and graduate students. So definitely we're looking into these.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also for the Bolin, mostly all of my students applicants are Bolin. So the opportunities for both graduates and undergraduates in Africa, Indonesia, and in India. So the as Chris mentioned here, we both have the structured and the unstructured. Mm-hmm. Boren can fund you to independently do your work mm-hmm. in the target country, or you can go with us first doing a summer and then a four in Wisconsin. And then, a four in Indonesia. Summer is for those probably, they have to prepare you for the four in Indonesia. We were amazed as you mentioned, Indonesia is becoming quite popular because we just started last year. We are not expecting many students because it was the first time, and we had 11 students. So we are expecting more this year. So I thought we do have this, just a quick information that you can look at, and the contacts that you need.
We'll definitely leave these here, and you're welcome to contact us. There's contact information on here at any point with more questions. It is worth applying to multiple programs and applying again. You know, you may not get into one, but then find out a month later you got into another, or it happens the year after that. It's totally worth it, and keep going for them, because they're really rare opportunities. I think back to my time on the Critical Language Scholarship, and I don't think I realized it at the time how lucky I was to have a one-on-one tutor who would do anything I wanted to work on, and it was paid for. And someone was there organizing my housing and helping me get a cell phone, and it allowed me to really focus on increasing my language skills, and studying and exposing myself to the culture and building relationships within the community. Such a rare opportunity, and it's a lifelong journey to learn a language. It's exhausting. It's important to keep in mind self-care and pacing yourself. It can be really tiring. So continue to look for these opportunities and don't give up. It's really hard around that intermediate level too. You kind of feel like you're plateauing and you're having trouble getting past that. But keep working on it, because exposure in the country is how you're going to get to fluency. Although the closer I get to fluency, the more hesitant I am about using the word. because the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know.
That's true.
But it's a worthwhile journey, for sure.
Right, it's amazing. And I also wanted to mention that for those who need something for a short time, every fall we are looking like for resident directors in all the places, especially those who have experience in those countries.
Definitely. I think all of us, there are a number of programs at American Councils where we work with resident directors on short-term programs and longer-term programs to help run our programs overseas. It's great if you are in grad school or have recently graduated and you're, you know, waiting for a clearance or to start something else, and it's a chance to make money and continue to be in the host country. Mm-hmm.
Do you have to be a grad student to apply for it?
No, you don't have to.
No.
You just need to have, you know, experience in the target country, and of course you need to have better language than the students.
We prefer that, but again, if you have other skills as well, if you're good with students and you can be a strong source of support for them, and you have the experience adapting culturally, that's really valuable as well. So we have actually hired resident directors with less than perfect language skills, if those other skills have been strong. So definitely don't, if you don't feel like you're 100% fluent, don't necessarily let that discourage you from applying, because if you've got other things to bring to the table, and you maybe consider.
And of course, you know, if you go back to the country, your language gets better too. Same.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, we just had a resident director in China that Chinese skills were a bit weaker than some of the students, but through the process of the program was great in every other area, and her Chinese really improved a lot in that time as well. So we will probably use her again next year if she wants to do it again. So I mean, you know, it's possible.
Yeah, I would also add that we've had some resident directors who are graduating seniors, usually not younger than that, but definitely those who have applied, and we've worked with them. If they're really qualified and outgoing and show skills elsewhere, like supporting or leading groups or just an interest in working with students who want to study a language intensively and they're passionate about that, then absolutely those opportunities are still there.
Citizenship requirement?
I think it depends on the program.
I can tell you for resident directors, there is not. We have had permanent resident holders serve as resident directors in the past, so that's not a problem. However, for the Critical Language Scholarship itself, it does require U.S. citizenship.
Same with the Bowen.
Yeah, so a lot of the government funding ones. Now, American Councils programs, I am not 100% on that, and that may require some follow-up. But you think you definitely find that out for sure.
Yeah, you generally just have to, you have to be legal to work. That's the main thing. Because you are hired as a U.S. employee for the program. So.
Great. Well, before concluding formally our seminar, I'd also like to point out that as part of the requirement for Seeger Center funding, our fellows here actually had to put up blog postings. So you can read more about their journeys learning languages on our website, actually. Two video and two in prose blog entries. So I'd encourage you, if you'd like to, just take a look, see it, and get some deeper dives into some of their language learning experiences. But thank you, everyone, for coming. If you'd welcome me in thanking our speakers today.